In 2023, an Afghan man named Juma walked into the Adelaide home of his friends, the writer Midge Tanith and her partner Sue. Juma was on the phone to Tehran, speaking to a woman who'd fled the Taliban with her five daughters. The clock was ticking. They needed rescue. Luckily for the woman, Layla, as we call her, she'd found the people she needed. Midge Tanith has been advocating for refugees for years through a not-for-profit called the Circle of Friends Australia. And Midge has documented what began that day with Juma's phone call in her new book, Layla's Story, published by Spinifex Press. It's an account in prose and verse of just how hard it is to find refuge in this country and how generous Australians must be to hold the door open to refugees. And Midge joins me now. Welcome to Late Night Live.
Thank you for having me.
Midge, before that phone call, you thought you'd had enough. You'd done enough for refugees. You'd done years and years and years of advocating, and you were putting that behind you. What changed your mind?
I think it was the moment of Juma walking into our living room, taking the phone call before he'd even sat down, before any of us had even sat down, and turning to me and saying, "There's a woman in Tehran who wants to know if there's anyone in the whole of Australia who can help her get a visa." If we had had warning of this, maybe somebody coming tomorrow morning to talk about helping a woman, we would have had a chance to gird our loins and say no.
But find somebody else to do the job.
Yes,
but
delegate,
She was on the phone in your sitting room.
Yes, and I spoke to her. And I said, "Do you speak English?" And she said, "No." I think that was her only word, her only phrase.
And so you spoke to her through Juma?
No, she had an interpreter with her in Tehran. She'd set herself up well to do what she could.
And everything in this story suggests a woman of clear mind and determination.
Oh, absolutely. She is so determined to find a life for her girls.
Tell me, why was she in Tehran with her five daughters? Where was her husband? Why had she left Afghanistan? What did she do in Afghanistan before she left?
She was a secondary school teacher. And of course, as soon as the Taliban took over again, she lost her job. Her older girls could not go to school anymore. The younger ones still could. Her husband was working in a northern province as a truck driver, because he'd lost his job as well, and he had this temporary job, and she just stopped hearing from him. And he was in the province where there was an uprising by the Hazaras against the Taliban, and the Taliban put down this uprising with great ferocity. That's all we know.
And we should, of course, say that Layla, her husband, and her children were Hazaras.
Yes, yes, a much persecuted minority.
Why is it that the Taliban loathe Hazaras?
Because most Hazaras are Shia Muslim. Taliban are Sunni Muslim. And they just see the Shias as infidels, as somewhat less than human.
Do they also despise the Hazara because the Hazara have such a commitment to education, learning, and learning not just religious texts?
Yes. A lot of the Hazara people that I know are highly motivated to go to university, get degrees, and get professional work. Whereas a lot of the Taliban, particularly the younger men, have been through the schools and they follow the dogma and they don't think beyond that.
What had Layla seen around her in Afghanistan that caused her to flee?
School bombings. The second one, only days before she fled, was in her street, and she had to rush through a scene of unbelievable carnage to find her middle daughter, who she did find safely. But she said she was walking through body parts, other mothers looking for parts of their children who had been killed, parts thrown up onto to roofs, into trees. It was a bloodbath and she had to get out.
And she spoke to you for, it seems, a time about the life that she'd had there in Afghanistan.
Sure,
on the
yes.
phone, and you've written about that.
Well, our first contact for the first couple of 3 months was through WhatsApp and messages in translation. She would write in diary, translate it into English, send it to me. I'd read it in English, reply, and she would translate my English reply back into diary and so on and so forth. So we got to know each other at an incredible depth through translation, and I learned a lot about her life.
And you've written a poem about that.
This online hookup breaks all the rules. We have nothing in common. Not language, not culture, not belief, not lifestyle. We're not looking for love. We're on a joint mission, a visa for you and your girls. But I can't help you, I say. Then I probably can't help you. Then I'll do my best, but there's no guarantee, and it will never be easy. Understatement. It wasn't easy.
It was also expensive. One of the revelations of the book is just how much money you had to raise to get this family to Australia.
Yes, this is because we were told at the time, knowing that Layla had 12 months to get out of the country before she was would be in danger of being deported back to Afghanistan, we needed to get her out quickly, and the only visa available to her was something called a community support visa, which meant that we had to guarantee that if she ever arrived in Australia, we had to support her financially for 12 months. And if you're thinking mother, five girls, something like $5,000 a month, over 12 months, that would be $60,000, plus airfares, plus visa application fees, plus lawyers' fees, migration lawyers' fees, plus exit visas, everything, added up to about $140,000.
How did you raise it? I love you laughing at that question.
We worked our little fingers to the bone. We did quiz nights. We did something called a very unusual fundraiser, because the local Patonk Club offered us their premises for free. So we had this rather weird fundraiser that consisted of an Afghan barbecue, plus anyone who came along could learn to play Patonk, and we had live music.
This is such an Adelaide story.
It is. It's a very Adelaide story. We had another huge fundraiser called A Most Unusual Bazaar, and we hired the whole of a building with its many rooms, and we filled every room with music, with a marketplace, with cafe, with an auction house, everything. Huge amounts of work, and that one day alone brought in about $9,000. We had open gardens. We had a whole range of quite unusual fundraisers, because we wanted to go beyond the usual dinners and quiz nights, although we did have a couple of quiz nights. We worked really hard. We had one fundraiser a month throughout the whole of 2024.
Now, as I was saying before, and you were saying as well, the clock was ticking for Layla. She had a year, otherwise she was mm-hmm. going to be sent back to Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And you tried to speed things up at the Australian end, but it didn't seem to work.
No, it didn't, until we had already sent a lot of our members, I think about 15 people, sent letters of support to Minister Giles, who was immigration minister at the time, asking that Layla's case be expedited, and nobody ever got a response. And then I sent the whole file to our mob in Sydney called Settlement Services International, and the woman that we were dealing with there was on the phone to me at the time, and she opened this file and she started reading these letters, and she said, "Oh my God, oh my God." Anyway, that was on a Friday. Something happened over the weekend, and on the Monday, we got notice from immigration that Layla was going to have her all-important interview in English to decide whether or not she would get her visa.
Now, she passed that interview, but then getting out of Tehran proved so difficult.
Because she had to go through health checks and biometrics, you know, getting your photos taken and getting that on some kind of system so that when you walked through immigration here, you were recognised.
Of course. So no doubt fingerprints and all of those things were taken as well.
Yeah, yeah. But apart from that, she had to wait for her exit visa from Tehran, and that took a month. I don't know how much she paid for that exit visa because she wouldn't tell me. She worked her fingers to the bone there in Tehran, just getting the money together to pay for things like the biometrics and the medical exam and the exit visa. But there was also another snag in that right at the last moment, we were told that she had to get a male relative of her missing husband to sign a release form allowing the girls to be taken out of Iran, not out of Afghanistan, but out of Iran.
Now, who was demanding that?
The Australian government.
What?
Yes, yes.
What? It sounds like the Taliban.
It does a little. And I think it was the Australian government covering their butts in case in some distant future that there might have been a custody query from the missing husband.
And it had to be a male relative of the husband. So a female relative of the husband didn't have the authority to give this sort of backing. It had to be a male.
Yes, and it
sounds great.
It couldn't be a male relative of Layla.
Sounds great. Did you find this person?
Well, we did. First of all, we submitted the form with Layla's brother signing it, and it was rejected. And, you know, this was getting awfully close to the deadline. And so eventually I kept saying to Layla, if you don't find someone, you will not get your visa. You'll fall at the last hurdle. And so she racked her brain, she talked to her brother, and her brother discovered a living relative, distant cousin of her missing husband, also living in Iran. And so she contacted him, asked for his signature on a form. He agreed. He, lovely man. She'd never met him, never heard of him. So right at the last minute, the signature was sent through, the form was submitted, and it was accepted.
Now, before this kerfuffle, had the UNHCR office in Tehran been of any help to Layla?
No. She had to travel from her outer suburb about 4 hours to reach the UNHCR office. She did this on four occasions, and each time she was turned away, given a phone number and told, go home and ring the number, which she did. And she did, and she did, and it was never picked up. And then the last time she went there, she was met by a local UNHCR staff member who said, yes, 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 we can help you. Now, if you'll just come upstairs and be very nice to my friend. Ooh. Of course, she fled, and that official phoned her in the 2 weeks that followed that last meeting, and until she had to block his number. That was all that the UNHCR would offer.
Midge, you have written about the bureaucracy of this.
Yep.
A poem that begins, all those bloody forms. Please read it.
All those bloody forms, placed like landmines on the narrow path to safety. Pay attention to detail. Find the names, the birth dates for your husband's parents in a land where birthdays just don't matter. send PDFs of your passport photos, your marriage certificate, your academic records. One wrong move, one mistake, one omission, and the whole painstaking process explodes, shatters dreams, destroys lives. Hard enough to deal with them here in Adelaide. We have the resources, computers, expert advice on hand, a swift and reliable internet. You, my dear, have only your phone with its camera, its keyboard, its integrated circuits, its ability to translate from English to Dari. Lose it and you're stuffed. Even that vital interview with immigration is conducted via video link on your phone. Does it ever keep you awake, my dear, this one tenuous link between yourself and the world?
What preparations had been made for their arrival?
Vast. We were very lucky to be able to find accommodation. It wasn't cheap. It was at market rent. But our circle of friends moved in furniture to fully furnish this three-bedroom apartment. Beds, bed linen, a couple of couches, chairs. The kitchen was over-equipped with something like 47 wine glasses and as I say, enough cups and saucers to invite the whole of the city of Adelaide to morning tea.
But you decided to fly to Doha to meet the family.
Yes. Layla was very worried about flying. She'd never been near an airport before. She had no idea. And so I was instructing her on all the things you do and don't do before you go to get your boarding pass. And she realised that there would be an 8-hour wait in Doha. And she said, how can I do this? How can I navigate? I don't speak Arabic. My English is very basic. I've got 5 girls. How can I do this? And I said, I'll fly there. I'll fly to Doha and I'll meet you there and we'll come back to Adelaide together.
And what was it like to meet, finally, to meet them all?
It was extraordinary. She cleared the barrier. The girls were the first to see me and they were crying out, oh, look, look, it's Mum Midge. And then Layla came through and we just fell into each other's arms and she cried and trembled and that's all I can remember in Doha. But when we got back to Adelaide after a long night, I think it's a 13-hour flight from Doha, as soon as I felt the wheels touch down on the tarmac, I noticed I was crying. And I looked over at Layla and she was crying too. And we kind of pulled ourselves together until we just got out of the door of the plane and
yes.
And we just lost it completely and we just stood there in the corner and cried and cried and cried and for how long I just don't
but
know.
But Midge, you had the biggest hurdle ahead. You had the immigration desk.
The immigration desk in the end was charming. They saw that these passports were refugee passports. They looked at Layla, they looked at the 5 kids, all dressed beautifully in yellow, and they just melted and they smiled and they just said, yeah, okay, welcome to Adelaide.
How are they getting on?
Brilliantly. Layla has a full-time job. Her English is amazing. Coincidentally, I'm seeing her this afternoon because she's still not confident walking into a dentist's surgery on her own.
I don't blame her.
It's just been such an incredible privilege to work at to support, to become enmeshed in this family.
Was it rather a shock when you told Layla that you are a lesbian, that you and Sue are a couple?
She was shocked for a moment. And this was when we were still messaging back and forth in translation. And so one day she said, why are you and Sue living together? And I just kind of trod on eggshells and said, well, you know, we'll get on very well. And yeah.
Don't you know the answer that you should give to that question? from America in the 1930s, the sharing expenses.
And so it was Layla who said, "Can I ask you a personal question?" And I thought, oh, yeah, here it comes. And she said, "Are you gay?" And I said, "Yes." And there was this long pause in the messaging. And I said, "Are you shocked?" And she said, "Yes." And I said, "Do you want to walk away?" And very quickly the message came back, "Oh, no, you are my mum's."
Splendid, absolutely splendid.
And that's how it's been. I mean, of course, we talked about it, the fact that most of our particular circle of friends are lesbians. Can I read another poem?
Yes, please. I was going to suggest.
It's called Tricky Question.
Oh, right. Okay. Yes. Tricky Question. And then there's another one I'd love you to read.
Okay. "I'm about to leave. It's late. We've been talking all evening. The door already open. The cold night air already muscling its way in. Sometimes the hardest question can only be asked as an afterthought. We stand there on the doorstep, shivering. How would you feel, Layla, you, a devout Muslim? How would you feel if one of your girls one day tells you she's a lesbian? Oh, mum, you say. If they grow up to be like you, I will be so proud."
Bloody good. Yeah. I would love you to read also Janus, 18 months in Adelaide.
Oh, okay. Janus, 18 months in Adelaide. "Your girls are thriving, academically brilliant. They speak like Aussies. You have a car, a license, a job of sorts. Your English much improved. Still, there are times when you rely on translation. And so to you, my dear, the last words from Dari into English. I turn and look back. Was it really me who walked this rough and rocky path, stumbling and burdened, never quite avoiding the potholes? Was it me who pulled her dreams around her shoulders like a cloak? The invisible woman, smiling at the world, screaming on the inside. Was it me who raised the banner of determination, filled in the empty holes in this strange new existence? I see the scabbed wounds, the half-healed fractures of my being. My Aussie mum, she lifts me up, she mends my soul. I am proud of whatever small things I have achieved. For this I thank my own self, the guidance of friends, and God, who in the darkest moments of my life sends me light in the most improbable ways. I look back at myself, I smile and say, fight, my warrior. Keep on fighting for yourself, for your girls who deserve the very best this new life can offer. Fight for the students you left behind, the ones who survived and the ones who didn't. Know that, exhausted or sad, you will always be strong. You will always be loved."
Midge, thanks for joining us on Late Night Live.
It's just been such a pleasure talking with you, David. Thank you.
I've been talking to Midge Tanith, playwright, teacher, refugee advocate, author of Layla's Story in prose and verse, published a couple of weeks ago by Spinifex Press. Midge's long-term volunteer work supporting refugees was recognised last year when she was named City of Adelaide's Citizen of the Year. This is Late Night Live.